Blog Talk Radio.
The Ohio State University College of Food, Agriculture, and Environmental Science is a driving force throughout rural Ohio, and in particular, its cell centers located in Piketon, Ohio. The cell centers provide research and educational formats in a number of areas, including horticulture, fruits and vegetables, soil and bioengineering, aquaculture, and business development services. Dr. Tom Worley, director of cell centers, hosts the monthly cell centers chat. Here's Tom.
Welcome to this edition of the South Center's Chat. It's a pleasure to be here this afternoon on a beautiful fall day in Rio Grande. And it's my pleasure to have as a guest today Dr. Greg Davis, who's Assistant Director for OSU Extension. Greg's office is up in Columbus on the main campus. And Greg has a long career with OSU Extension, working in the area of community development. Stretches way back to his beginning days in Crawford County when he was focused on issues relevant to community economic development in the county. And Greg, it's great to have you. Welcome.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks a lot. Good to be here. As you said, I started, I guess it's probably been about 20 years now, at least, but I've been part of the extension team. I actually began in Fulton County for a short time and then moved to Crawford in about the middle of 1996, and so Crawford, for your audience, if they're not familiar, it's the home of the Bratwurst Festival, and it's a couple of counties north of Columbus, so it's somewhat on the way to the Lake Erie if you're traveling through Columbus on the way to the lake. And so, I spent some time there in Crawford County working with local officials and community residents. We did a lot of land use planning. If you think back to the mid-90s, land use planning seemed to be a really hot topic. The economy in the 1990s was really booming, and it seemed as though communities and the farm community in general were really interested in trying to get their arms around, how to make this development sustainable and in a planned way. And you may remember, too, there were even some dollars available for farmland preservation plans. And that stems back to the mid-90s when we did that kind of work. But after having worked in Crawford County for about 5 years, I moved to a district position. I was based in northwestern Ohio, and I think we had 19 counties at the time that I gave leadership to really through our county extension programs. And so we had individuals throughout those 19 counties that worked in areas of economic development, leadership development, organizational capacity building and land use planning, and really my role there was to help those county-based extension agents, we called them at the time, with their programming resources and working with a variety of audience to meet those local needs. And then, after about 5 years there, I think I took a position in the Department of Agricultural, Environmental, and Development Economics here within the College of Food, Ag, and Environmental Sciences. So I was on campus in that department giving statewide leadership to our community economics programs. And so really the workhorse in that portfolio of programs was the Business Retention and Expansion Program. And so that's a program with a long history within Ohio. It really goes back about to the mid-1980s. We had some faculty members in that department that really had a focus on community engagement. And at the time, the economic development emphasis, it seemed, was really on industrial attraction. And so, that attraction game, there's a whole lot of communities vying for a very limited number of new facilities. And so we had faculty, one by the name of George Morse, who's retired now, another Leroy Hushak, who's also retired. You probably remember having had some opportunities to work with those two fine economists in the department here. They sat down and said, you know, there's a whole lot that can be done with existing businesses in a community to really stimulate the local economy. And so the two of them sat down and hammered out in essence what we think of as the business retention and expansion program today that I can talk about a little bit more
during
the time we have.
Sure. Well, I think that even the start of George Morse with that program, or at least before that program, actually was here in Jackson County up at the district office where George began his career with OSU Extension, and as you pointed out, originated the BR&E program in response to this part of the world anyway, and obviously was on campus with you for a period of time and then moved on to University of Minnesota and implemented a statewide program up there based on retention and expansion. So a very viable program. I think it's still a part of the portfolio that's available, and I don't know how often it's still used, but I can recall in my tenure that being used over in Highland County, for instance, and I feel that other counties have benefited from that. So could you want to give a thumbnail sketch of what BR&E is all about?
Absolutely happy to. You're absolutely right, Tom. The origins of the program really go back to that part of the world there in southern Ohio. And it really was focused on more of the rural communities, the way I understand it. And part of that was because, traditionally the more rural communities have fewer resources to work with. And so unlike the larger cities and the urban metro areas that, they've got resources that they can devote in a variety of areas, typically you've got a variety of needs in more rural communities and much fewer resources. So those limited resources require folks to get more creative. And that's really where I think George and Leroy, they kind of, struck that gold mine when they said, well, here's a program that really for very little money, there can be all kinds of impact. So the basic essence of the program was and still is to this day involving local community residents with an interest in their local economy in really sitting down and trying to get their arms around what the local economy looks like. And so, how do you do that? How do you describe it? Well, you can look at existing data, right? And so there's all kinds of census data that describe the demographics. There's the Bureau of Economic Analysis that tracks new business starts and looks at the overall performance of economies. But what you don't get is that local feel. And so I think really the neat thing about the BR&E program as they envisioned it was local residents would actually go visit businesses within the community in teams. And usually the team was anywhere from 2 to 3 individuals there locally. And so what they would do as a community, they would sit down as a committee and say, what is it we really need to know and why do we need to know it? So what you wouldn't do is ask questions that were, nice to know, but really wouldn't provide you with any kind of information or direction that you could use to then take action. So it's informing community action and that local action that so many folks, especially in rural areas, they've got that passion and energy and they want to do something about that community. And so coupled with the existing data, these BR&E task forces would collect local data. And they would, in essence, narrate that local economy and learn things about it that they could not learn via existing data sources. So then those kinds of information would inform a plan of action that would enable the local community to take steps necessary or desirable to see these local businesses expand. Mm-hmm. So it was almost like a complementary approach to industrial attraction where, you realize that having a new facility would be fantastic, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with seeing an existing facility grow, and that really was the essence of the program.
Right. Well said. From what I understand, obviously, you have way more experience being involved with it and having your sleeves rolled up, but I think just one thing came to mind as you described it, that it wasn't OSU Extension coming in with, here's the answer, here's the plan, here's what you ought to do. It really is working with and being involved in trying to find what some of the potential hurdles were or some of the opportunities that could be built upon. And I think that the fact that the real key, as I recall, was that local task force that you talked about, having local people engaged, that we're really passionate about seeing their community improve or sustain and move forward. And I think local businesses respond so well when their neighbors are the ones leading the charge, so to speak.
Well, and so many times you'd have the local business say, we're so excited you want to come, you know, see what we have. You know, no one has ever wanted to see what we do inside these walls. And so personally, I have been on visits where I had that sort of a reaction from the folks we were visiting. And so it was really, it has been really an interesting way to grow community within a place where there's opportunity to do that. Now, I got to share this too. You had talked about where it started and where we've been. The last time I checked, we were involved with communities in 79 of the 88 counties in Ohio.
Wow.
And so in some cases, it's as small as a village where we've worked with on a program like this. And so it's the kind of thing where, you know, it doesn't have to be on a county level. It could be in a village as small as 500 people that we've worked these kinds of programs. We've also worked in multi-county regions. I did one, I'm trying to remember, I think there were 11 counties. It was the Eastern Ohio Development Alliance group, and that goes back about 8 or 9 years probably now. But then you've got everything in between. But I think, by and large, historically, if you looked at the kinds of communities that we worked with since 1986, they've been predominantly rural. And so it's been a fantastic program. And it really, like I said, it helps build capacity to better understand a local economy. It informs local economic development strategies where you really wouldn't have, you know, the best local knowledge informing those strategies otherwise. And it just really brings people together.
Sure. Yeah, I think you summed it up when you said that, because I think that just the fact that a group, the initiative to work with the program and engage with the program, and as you pointed out in your comments, to actually show up at local businesses and say, you're important. You're important enough that we're coming to talk to you, and we want to see you succeed and continue to grow and retain your business and expand, which is obviously in the name, is a great shot in the arm to a local community in and of itself. Just the fact that somebody noticed that we are here and that we contribute and that we can continue to build and thrive is so important. So great aspects on that.
One of the neat things I'll add, and then we can move on to some other topics, I think this is neat that, you know, our approach has been to teach people in these communities how to do this. And so it's really an opportunity of co-discovery where we're working as a team, and there's things that we actually learn about communities and the interesting dynamics within communities when we work with them to put this program together. But really our goal, like I said, is to enable them to carry it forward. So,
yep.
You know, we'll come in, we'll work with them in one particular project, and then we'll hope that the next time they're able to do it on their own. Now, that's not always the case. They may call us back for some advice and counsel, but, I mean, ultimately, really, you know, there's communities. I said we worked in 79 of 88 counties. There's very few that we've worked with over and over and over. And in some cases, you might say, well, you know, you've got turnover in local leadership and whatnot, economic development offices. Maybe you do need to go back. And we have in some of those cases. But the other neat thing, I think, is there's communities that we've worked with that are now part of our teaching team, which, I mean, they've totally embraced the concept, and they've done a really good job at seeing what it can do. And they're such believers in the program that, in fact, we're at the International Economic Development Council a number of weeks ago here in Cleveland. It was actually the international conference was in Ohio. And so we had a team there. We did a panel, and we had a panelist that we had invited from the city of Strongsville. And he was so excited to share what they've done over the years, having worked with this program.
Great, great. Excellent. Well, you're right. I think we could spend the rest of our time just reviewing BR&E and some of the successes and some of the things that have grown out of that. But suffice it to say, the program is still available, and we have community development specialists that can assist if there are community members that become aware of it through this means that you can be contacted, or myself, anybody here at Rio Grande can make the connections on furthering this. But I know another topic that is of more recent, and especially in this region of the state and further east as we get to Pennsylvania, is the whole shale gas phenomena, if I can use that word, or I guess some people say the play, if you will,
right,
in eastern Ohio and Pennsylvania, western Virginia, and the panhandle, obviously. Many aspects of community development come into the picture when we're talking about this newfound wealth, if you will, and being taken advantage of over recent years. Can you share with us a little bit about how that has played out?
I'd be happy to, Tom. As you said, it is absolutely a phenomenon, and to be a part of it here in this time, I think, has been very exciting for me. In fact, so we have a work group that's been meeting now for at least 3 years, and when I think of the kinds of conversations and the communications that they're sharing, the information back and forth, it's amazing. You talk about the different aspects of community development. We've got folks from the Ohio Farm Bureau that are part of the work group, the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. I mean, that would make absolute sense. There's folks at the university, the Subsurface Energy Resource Center, and so you've got then extension resources from a variety of communities within the affected parts of the state. And so team has been not only sharing information, but trying to get their arms around what information can we create to help communities and landowners and local officials. I mean, it just the impact of the Ohio shale play is just far-reaching. And so, the folks in your audience that are perhaps in this part of the state where they've really experienced it, they absolutely know it's really the depth and the breadth of the impact of this phenomenon. But the one project I'd really like to talk about with your audience now is it's kind of a research project that also was an engagement project. And we had a small team of our community development professionals in the state work. It's been a three-year project.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some funding through the Economic Development Administration, the EDA, which is part of the Department of Commerce.
Mm-hmm.
And it really was focused on trying to get our arms around how to build sustainability around this phenomenon. So often you'll see, a boom period like this inevitably leads to a bust period. And so, what can we learn? What have we learned in the past? What are the kinds of things we can do to help even out the boom bust, so it's not such a spike in each direction? And so this team, they came together and they said, well, there's a multifaceted approach to this phenomenon. We want to try to look at this from the economics perspective, the energy perspective, the sustainability perspective, the relationships, the community interpersonal relationships perspective. And so it was a pretty diverse set of members on this team. But then the neat thing, I think, too, is they engaged the regional economic development districts. And so there were 25 counties involved. And within those 25 counties, really, it was comprised of four of these economic development districts. And I think the one that's probably most familiar to your audience would be the Buckeye Hills,
mm-hmm.
Buckeye Hills Development District. We also mm-hmm. worked with the Omega Group
mm-hmm.
and then the Northeast Ohio Four County Regional Planning and Development Organization and then Eastgate. So really this territory, you talked about the eastern part of the state, probably goes in about three counties, starting up around Akron, Canton, coming down along the Ohio River,
mm-hmm.
Into Noble, absolutely into Noble County. I know there's been some activity there, and maybe even a few wells even further. But this team, they looked at all kinds of the existing data, kind of similar to the VR&E approach. What do we know? What's already been collected? What don't we know? How do we add value? How do we utilize the data that we do have to identify implications for the future and then inform decision making? And that's, as you know, that's really one of the key focuses of extension, is to inform decision making.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just for example, here's some numbers that I have pulled out of one of the reports. When you look at the number of wells drilled in each of the regions, and I'm looking at just from 2010 to 2013, the Buckeye Hills, for example, in 2013 there were 104 wells drilled, and in 2010 there were 48. So you can get a feel. You went from 48 and then you added 52 more in 2011. You added 107 more in 2012, and then another 104 the year after. And so the Omega region, even more. They started in 2010 with 94 that they added. They added 151 more the year after, and in 2012, another 228. And then in 2013, they added another 389.
Wow.
And so when you look at a map, yeah, it's just impressive to see that the activity now, a lot of that activity has really dropped off just because of, you know, what we say, the boom and then the bust. And so, oh my gosh, we've got a surplus of product. What happens? Price drops. When price drops, they slow down on exploration.
Are you able to characterize, Greg, this is very dramatic in terms of this buildup, in terms of the drilling of the wells, and I'm sure that the number of new businesses, the number of new hotel rooms, the number of new drilling service companies, for instance, the number of new welders that came to the region, just a lot of economic activity that is spawned by the related effects in the local economy. Is that holding up, or are these businesses, types of business, under pressure now already as well?
Well, that's a perfect question, Tom. Really, what the key part of this project was to get our arms around the impact. So what, you know, we're looking at this activity. We know for sure that, you know, we can track jobs. You know, when you look at the guys that drive the white trucks and wear those helmets, right, the guys that are actually on the well pad site doing the work, you can go out and you can count those jobs, but then ultimately the jobs that support those jobs were really what this group was interested in. And so, yeah, your question's right on. And that's really, that was the focus, the areas of focus for this project. And so what they did, the planning team, they sat down and they said, well, we know we have some data here we can work with. We have this. We're going to do some economic analyses on that data and try to estimate what the impact is and what it means for communities. And so, again, it was to better inform those sustainable planning decisions for communities to take. And so I think it was neat. I'll just touch on some of the quick findings here. You know, when you think about this phenomenon, what do you see when you drive through this part of the country? Well, you see those well pads, right? You see trucks, right? They're transporting equipment and materials and supplies that are required to drill these wells. But then once wells are drilled, what do you need? Right, you've got access to the product, but then how do you move the product?
Mm-hmm.
It can be actually marketed and distributed. And so there was a whole lot of activity with pipelines, right? Think about everything involved in pipeline construction, from the right-of-ways, right? There's jobs involved in identifying where the pipeline will actually go. Mm-hmm. And then you think about, okay, so we know we've got a right-of-way. Now we actually have to, we're involved in surveying that. We're involved in engineering that. And then we're involved in transporting the materials necessary to install the pipeline, right? So there's a whole lot of pieces and parts, and while it might actually occur near the well site or even in the region where the drilling's taking place, think about, you know, with transportation systems such as that, think about Eastern Ohio and the roads that you have. Now think about the existing industries that were in place in Ohio and this part of the state prior to this phenomena. Really what we saw, I think, it's pretty kind of neat, but the metal manufacturing saw the biggest gains during this time period. Yeah, so think about Youngstown, farther up into the northeastern part of the state, historically involved in steel milling, right?
Right.
And so pipeline fabrication and transportation really was the biggest winner during this time period in terms of local, and when I say local, I mean Ohio, economic impact. And so behind the primary metal manufacturing sector was the chemical and chemical-based products, which would make sense, right? We're creating chemical-based products. And then glass and ceramics was a big one.
Wow.
Yeah.
A little bit surprising to me, but I don't know all the aspects
of it. I might have to dig a little deeper into finding out what all falls into the glass and ceramic sector. Mm-hmm. But then following that, again, somewhat makes sense, is machinery manufacturing.
Yeah, that would be
I mean, that kind of gives you a feel for for the kind of industrial sectors that really felt the impact in terms of economic change as a result of the drilling in this part of the state.
Greg, the discussion that you've led here this afternoon has been just right on, and I think characterizes the types of things that go on in OSU Extension and community economic development, and the examples that you've provided from business retention and expansion and up to the current energy work in eastern Ohio are perfect examples of what OSU Extension engages in and how we are able to go in and work with local groups. We're just down to the last minute or so, and I wanted to give you a chance just to get your email out there, if you'll just state that for us, and maybe a phone number in case someone would want to follow up. We want to be sure that that's available.
Absolutely, Tom. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you and your audience today, and I'd be happy to talk more about any of the programs we talked about here in the last few minutes or anything else that folks might be interested in related to community development and extension and how we work with communities throughout Ohio. My contact info is davis.1081at osu.edu. So that's Davis, D-A-V-I-S, and then a period, and then a 1, a 0, an 8, and a 1, 1081, at OSU, and that's for Ohio State University.edu.
Good. And a quick phone number
that I can be reached most simply is 614-292-5942.
Greg, I think that we're just about exhausted our time. I have time to thank you. I'm very appreciative of your time this afternoon and the excellence with which you presented an overview of community development, and appreciate your work as Assistant Director for OSU Extension. I think that we will look forward to reconnecting with you. I think there's a lot more to community development than we've been able to cover in a short period of time here, but we'll save that for next time out, and until then, we will be in touch and see you up on campus somewhere.
Sounds good, Tom. Okay. Look forward to it.
Thanks again.
Have a good day.
Okay.
Bye.